At some point in our very distant ancestors' lives, we figured out that when a member of our group passes on, the rest of us need to figure out how to handle the mortal remains. It probably started out as a practical necessity, but as our various cultures evolved, the way that we deal with death and with the bodies themselves has evolved too. Though the rituals differ wildly, the sentiment is core. We remember our dearly departed in ceremony and either cremate, bury, or mummify the body. That's pretty much the acceptable ways to do it. But for every normal way of doing things, there's always something weird on the go. Some way out of the box thinking. Something that makes us say, "That's some weird boy." Welcome to the Some Weird Podcast, a podcast about strange and unusual stories told by us, a sister and brother team hailing from the island of Newfoundland. I'm your co-host, Chrissy.
And I am your co-host, Barry. In our last episode, we discussed what happens to our souls after we die. In this episode, we're going to be talking about non-traditional choices for people's bodies when they die.
This topic was partially requested by one of our listeners and my brother-in-law, Mark. So this one is for you, you freak. Let's get this on the go. So I'm going to start off the episode with the story that was suggested by Mark, my brother-in-law. Before we get into that, though, Mark is actually married to my husband's sister. So I think technically he's not my brother-in-law, but we've had this conversation, he and I, before.
Yeah, my wife's sister's husband, we've had that conversation before. That technically he's not my brother-in-law.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
See, we're having parallel conversations in our parallel lives.
Maybe it's the Mandela effect.
Maybe. Yeah,
maybe there's two E's in Febreze in this other world, too.
I had to think about that. Is there two E's in Febreze or no?
There's not, no.
So is it Febrez?
Febrez. That's right, yeah.
Some Weird Podcast brought to you by Febrez. I think technically the person that you're married to, their siblings are your... So like your wife is my sister-in-law.
Yes.
And my husband is your brother-in-law.
Yes.
But your wife and my husband are not in-laws. But who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Mark and I decided many, many years ago that since he and I have the same mother and father-in-law, that should make us brother and sister-in-law. That's what we went by.
We're going to rewrite the history books.
There you go. Anyway, so that might give you some insight into the completely inane and ridiculous conversations that eventually led he and I to have this conversation. It went something like this. Hey, Chrissy, you ever hear of necropants? Shit, Mark, no, but now I'm on a mission to find out everything about necropants.
There you go. That's how we come up with our topics here. I know it's a very intricate process.
If anyone ever says, how do you come up with your ideas? That's pretty much like this. So that one-off conversation did lead to this episode that we're going to present now for all you fine people out there. Necro comes from the Greek necros, meaning corpse, and pants comes from the English pants, meaning pants.
Meaning pantaloon.
Pantalones.
We do the word trouser or slacks.
I don't like the word slacks.
Yeah, it's not a good term.
Right? To me, slacks are what you had to wear at All Hallows as part of your uniform.
Yeah, that's right.
Trousers I'm okay with, but normally I would say pants.
Trousers is almost pretentious to me. I don't know. You'll get a nice trouser there. Nice seam on the trouser.
Oh, really?
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe I'm a snob.
They're just pants.
Well, these necro pants are more than just pants. So let's get into this. Necro pants means corpse pants, but they're not just the bottoms of your final suit that your body will wear for eternity. Necro pants are a whole other thing. For this story, we need to go back to 17th century Iceland. Specifically, the 36-year period between 1654 and 1690, known as the Age of Fire. Now, that seems like a very short time to be labeled an age, but from what I can gather, this period was called the Age of Fire because during this time, Iceland had its very own little witch panic. During this time, 21 people were burned. This is why it was called the Age of Fire. Possibly at the stake, I don't know, but that's why it's called the Age of Fire.
Because they're burning witches?
Yes. Okay. There was a few pretty blatant differences between the Icelandic witch hunt and the most famous North American witch hunt, which was, do you know what it is, Barry?
Salem witch hunt?
Yay! Yes, the witch hunt of Salem, Massachusetts, which was actually much shorter. I think it was like 8 months long or something.
spearheaded by one Stefano De Mera. No.
That old chestnut. You and I both love Days of Our Lives.
I was way too into that soap opera.
I know. It was great, though. But yeah, Salem, Massachusetts. So there's a couple of pretty big differences. Number one, the Salem witches were mostly hanged. They weren't really burnt at the stake or burnt in any other way. Whereas in Iceland, the witches were burned, right? Then that's, again, that's the age of fire. It's like, shit, the age of fire, burn up all our people.
It was the age of hanging in Salem.
Exactly. And number two, the Salem witches were almost all female, whereas in Iceland, all but one were male. So they're man witches.
Wouldn't that be a warlock?
You know, I don't know. They call it a witch hunt, but I would just call it a man witch.
The man witch? Okay.
Like, are you ready for a man witch meal?
Yeah, so I was about to say, yeah, like that ground beef meal out of a can. A sandwich is a sandwich, but a man witch is a meal.
And you burn it too sometimes. Yeah. The sorcery game was a man's gig in 17th century Iceland, and this may be partly due to the whole business of necropants. According to the folklore, one engaging in sorcery would be able to make a pair of necropants if they followed a very strict set of rules. First off, you need to have at least one very good friend, and that friend has to be a dude.
It'd be very depressing if you could meet that criteria.
Well, I don't know if anyone has a friend this good. This dude had to be super chill because he had to be willing to agree, and you can't force him to do it. He has to willingly agree that after he dies, you're allowed to dig up his body and fashion a pair of pants out of his flayed skin from the waist down.
What?
So finding the one friend, that's probably most of us could manage that, right? But to find one that says, you know what, when I die, go ahead and make yourself a pair of pants out of me.
In all fairness, if I was dead, I wouldn't care if someone made pants out of my legs. Go for it.
Okay.
What's it to be?
Anybody?
Ted? No.
Ted, now is your chance to fashion some necro pants. And actually, you would be a pretty good candidate for necro pants for Ted, because the person that you choose needs to be bigger than you.
Oh, I'm bigger than Ted.
Yeah.
There you go.
Ted's going to invite you over for copious amounts of cheeseburgers later. See how that heart's working out for you. That's step one. Get someone to agree to be used as material from Joanne's Fabrics. Do you have Joanne Fabric shops?
No. Okay. When we were in Florida, we went there though.
Okay. It's a fabric store. Anyway, the person whose skin will eventually become your pants must die of natural causes. So you can't get your buddy to agree and then work them then and there. It's got to happen naturally. Now it's a waiting game. If you die before your buddy, then that's just too bad. No necropants for you. But assuming that your very agreeable friend dies of natural causes, you still can't just start hacking away at his corpse. He still has to be given the proper funeral rites, and he must be buried. You can't skip over that part.
Oh, you're dead? Taking the pants now?
No, that's not the way it works. I mean, you could, but then they won't work.
Define natural causes. Like, is a heart attack natural causes?
Well, if Ted invited you over and gave you copious amounts of cheeseburgers until you died, I don't know that that would be considered natural. So it's a fine line. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know what cosmic being makes the assessment of whether or not it's natural, but let's just say for the sake of this story that you got to die of natural causes.
Okay.
Okay, so once the funeral is over and all that pomp and circumstance is over with, then you can start to get to work. With your pre-death agreement in place, you can now dig up that body and start flaying. You start at the waist, and you must remove, check this out, you must remove all the skin intact without any holes or any imperfections all the way down to the toes, including the toes. So picture that. It's just like a fully intact waist down to the toes. Empty legs. That's what you're ending up with.
It's gross.
Well, so you have the waist, you got the arse, you got the you got the twigs and berries, you got legs, feet, toes, all one perfect solid piece. It looks like the bottom of feety pajamas, not really pants.
Okay.
And if there's any flaws, if you accidentally like poke a hole when you're doing the flaying, then it's all for naught. Your pants are fucked. You can't use them.
Okay.
But if you did it right, go ahead and step right into those pants like the Ed Gein wannabe motherfucker that you are.
Did you get the pants superpowers, I guess?
you do get pants superpowers. Wiggle them toes right into the empty toes of your dead friend's feet. Pull the necro pants gently up over your thighs and up to over your own waist. And make sure you put your dick and balls correctly in.
You better... I've changed my mind on wanting to do this.
And you better align your arsehole, because guess what? You can never take them off.
Okay.
Sort of. We'll get to that in a minute. So if you don't have your arsehole lined up, you fill your necro pants up with shit because it's...
So the pants got to be completely intact. So there has to be a shit hole and a pee hole.
Yes. You got to line that holes up. And that's why I said your pants person needs to be bigger, right? Because you need to be able to fit into their legs.
All right.
You good so far with this?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You had me until arsehole and dickhole had to line up.
All right. Assuming you get a perfectly flayed pair of pants made from your recently deceased buddy and you manage to get them onto yourself, you can now infuse them with the magic with just a few easy steps.
Okay.
First, steal a coin from a destitute widow. She must be destitute. Given that you are just at a funeral for your pants friend, you may already have a fresh widow in mind.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, get a piece of paper and write a magical symbol on it. I don't know what it is. It's something that means something, like a rune or whatever. But it's some specific magical symbol. Now, finally, take the stolen coin and take your little note and slip them into the scrotum of your necro pants.
Jesus.
At this point, you may be asking what all the appeal of necro pants is.
Yeah, like, who came up with this shit?
Sorcerers in 17th century Iceland. So far, you've desecrated a corpse, you burgled a poor lady, and now you're sitting there like a fucking ghoul wearing some dude's skin.
With money in the scrotum.
Well, here's the reason why. The necro pants will fuse to your own body, except for the magical scrotum, which is holding the ill-gotten coin and magical symbol. This part remains loose for a good reason. With your enchanted corpse pants, you have all you need to access unlimited money. All you need to do is wish for money, and it magically appears right in your corpse nutsack. You need to just gingerly reach into the scrotum and retrieve the coins.
I think you have to whack it out. New definition to the money shot.
Gross. Yep, I never thought about it that way. So this is a very good reason why we never tell each other our stories before.
Exactly.
Money shot or not, you can extract the coins from the nutsack, but do not take out the original coin. I guess that's the magical thing, and it's needed to generate the subsequent coins, and that power is non-transferable. However, the power of the necro pants is transferable. It's kind of like a generational wealth kind of a situation. You can pass this on to your children. Actually, yeah, you can only pass it on to your sons, I guess, not really your daughters. And this is what I meant when I said that you can't take the pants off. You sort of can, but only in a very specific situation. You can't go home at the end of a long day and just slip off your necro pants and hang them on the rack till the next day. If you do that, the magic is gone and there's no more unending money. However, if you feel that your end is coming, or if you're just done with the whole bizarre situation, you can give the necro pants to your son. Or I guess you can give it to anybody. I guess you would probably want to give it to your kid.
No, I don't want to give them to my kid.
I'm not sure. I don't know why you want them in the first place, but...
Well, I guess for the financial windfall of it all, I guess.
I guess. Let's say you give it to your son or to someone that you want to give unlimited money to somewhere down the line. There's a method that you have to do to pass the necro pants on to the next generation, though. The pants cannot ever be fully off, so you have to remove just one leg. Your son, or whoever's going to get the pants, must then put his leg into that leg. So now you each have one leg in the pants. Then you remove the second leg, and then the next guy puts his leg in that leg. The new pants owner can now conjure his own coins, and you can go safely to your great reward without the burden of the ill-gotten pants weighing you down. This pants transfer, like I thought about this, that seems pretty much impossible. How would you manage to go one leg in, one leg out, but never be fully off of anybody? But then again, this is just a piece of folklore. It's not a real story. It's just a story to entertain, to extract some lesson about greed and decency, probably, and ultimately end up on a podcast by two Newfoundlanders that have a bizarre interest in weird things. There's only ever been one known case where someone was accused of possessing necropants, but most people agree that they were never actually really created during the Age of Fire, when the stories of witchcraft were rampant in Iceland. There is a replica of necropants.
Oh.
At the Museum of Icelandic Sorcery and Witchcraft, which is definitely a must-see for me if I was ever to go to Iceland.
Oh, 100%.
Yep. You can see pictures of it online. The full everything is there. The dick, bag, it's all there. That's it. That's the story, the crazy-ass story of necropants.
Well, in the six seasons of the Some Weird Podcast, we've talked about a lot of weird shit, and this, by far, would be the top of the list.
You think this is?
Mark, you are a fucked up guy. No, I'm joking.
Yep. Necropants. Like, somebody made this up. What person made these rules? You know, my nutsack looks like a coin purse. I think I'll make a story about how you can always get money from it. I don't know.
Interesting. Like I said, originally I said I'd do it. I've changed my mind on that. But very interesting story. No, I appreciate Mark for suggesting that. It's enriched my weirdness.
Yep. So now you know the story of necropants.
I don't know where we go from that, but we'll try to transition here. I'm going to talk not about pants, but hands. It's called the Hand of Glory.
Okay.
And you kind of talked about a little of this in your part, but I'll just recap a few things here. So when a person dies, there's a lot of traditions on what to do with the body. For practicing Irish Catholics like ourselves, death is usually accompanied by a several-day wake in which the body is laid out in a casket for friends and family to come say their goodbyes and possibly have a toast or two in that person's memory. Mm-hmm. The wake's followed by a funeral mass in which friends and family gather to say goodbye to the individual. Then they're buried and off they go. What seems to be more common now is a person's cremated and their ashes are stored in an urn. It's a keepsake, I suppose. Sometimes, you know, they'll do different things with the ashes. You know, sometimes they're buried. Sometimes they're sprinkled over an area that was of great importance to the person. I think Keith Richards smoked or snorted his father's remains, but...
Oh my God!
That's not the norm.
No.
One of the definitely not so common things to do once you die is to make a Hand of Glory. So when I first heard this story, I thought of the infamous Hand of God goal. Do you know what the Hand of God goal is?
What's it called?
The soccer goal, the infamous Hand of God.
No, what's okay. that?
So in, I think it was 86, but I might have the wrong. It was in the World Cup anyway. It was England mm-hmm. and Argentina in like the semifinals or something like that. And Diego Maradona, you know, was one of the most famous soccer players of all time. During the game, I guess there was one part where he was going in to head the ball. And when he headed the ball, he punched it with his fist as well. And he scored a goal. And he started like, celebrating. And he told his teammates, celebrate with me or they're going to disallow the goal for a handball. And they ended up letting the goal count. And after the game, when he was interviewed, they said, you know, did you touch that ball with your hand? And he said, well, you know, it was a little bit from the hand of Maradona and a little bit from the hand of God.
Oh.
So they call it the Hand of God goal. But anyway, the Hand of Glory is nothing like that.
Okay.
Back in the day, people were sentenced to death for crimes all the time, right? Some of which the punishment probably doesn't meet that crime. So, you know, if you're hung for sheep stealing, for example, right?
Yes.
You know, if you steal a sheep, obviously, you know, you need some kind of punishment. I don't think hanging is the right one for it.
No.
But, you know, people were sentenced like for death all the time. So when someone was sentenced to death, there were several ways the punishment was carried out. Includes, you know, beheading sometimes, stoning, which I'm sure is a really hard way to go. Probably the most common was hanging. So once these sentences were carried out, what became of these bodies? Were they thrown into a field to be studied for science?
Actually, I think some of them were given to Edinburgh, what's it called, physician school to be...
Okay.
But anyways, that's a different weird story.
Yeah, was it Bring Out Your Dead from Monty Python? Yeah. Either way, once the body's been destroyed after death, there was a procedure to create something known as the Hand of Glory. This was the process of removing the hand of a dead person, preferably someone who died by hanging, and drying it and pickling it for future use.
For future use. Okay.
And we'll get into what the future use is in a second.
Who gets the hand?
Whoever wants to take it. I mean, whoever wants to.
First come, first serve.
Once you go through this process, the hand gets some magical abilities, which we'll get to in a second. It was often the left hand that was severed, unless the person was sentenced to death due to murder, in which case whatever hand did the deed was the hand removed. So if you happen to, you know, have a knife and you cut someone's head off or stab someone with a knife and it was the right hand, you cut the right hand off for this hand of glory. The process in which this hand of glory was made is very unique. It still is unique, I guess. There's no reason why you can't do it today, I suppose. But you don't hear about it much anymore. So step one, chop off the hand. I don't know if you use like a cleaver or a saw or whatever you would use. So step two is you place the hand into a sheet. You wrap it tight, so tight and so that you squeeze out the remaining blood.
Ew.
Step three, place the cloth-wrapped hand into an earthenware vessel. Like a fucking clay pot. All right, okay. So step three, place the cloth-wrapped hand into a clay pot, and then you season it with salt and pepper and some other spices. One called saltpeter, I'm not sure what that is.
Saltpeter? Yeah. Isn't that the thing that makes your dick not work?
Okay. So your necropants dick. So anyway, you put these seasons on it, and you be very careful to powder all the severed hands, so it has to be really, very well seasoned.
Okay.
So step four, you leave the hand in this pickle mixture for a fortnight until it's well dried. So a fortnight is 2 weeks. Is that right?
I think so.
Or is that fourscore?
I think fortnight is 2 weeks. Or okay. A video game where you kill people, then dance.
Then do the John Cena dance, yeah. So step five is you expose the hand to the sun until it's well dried, completely perched.
What if it rains?
I don't know.
Okay.
And you're screwed. Then you got to cut the other hand off. So you can heat an oven if the sun isn't available to completely dry it out. Step six is you combine the human fat from the severed hand with virgin wax and Lapland sesame to make a candle.
Where do you get all this shit?
I don't know.
Okay.
But the severed hand can be used as a candle holder for this human-made fat candle.
It's a lot of work to go through to have a candle holder.
So this is the process and how to do it. I guess the most obvious question would be, why would you do this? There has to be a million easier ways to make a candle. There must be many other resources that you can use to construct a more efficient candlestick holder. So it was believed that the Hand of Glory held special powers to those who owned them. And these include the ability to make people motionless or in a deep sleep.
Nice.
The ability to provide endless light and never burn out.
Okay.
Providing a light that was only visible to the person wielding the hand. So basically the ability to see in the dark.
It's like Dungeons and Dragons.
That's right. And the ability to unlock any door. So basically the ultimate tool for a thief. If you happen to be a thief class in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And the only way it could be extinguished, according to some, was by... Well, how do you think you would extinguish something like that? There's only one liquid known to man that can do it.
Piss? I don't know. What is it?
Milk.
Oh. Okay. Is it just regular like cow milk or is it like human milk?
It's any milk. I didn't really get goat milk, rat's milk.
Rat milk.
Milk and the rats. Okay. So yeah, so these were made, I guess, for thieves to be able to make people go to sleep and then you go rob them blind and, you know, use it to see in the dark and open doors and all this kind of stuff, right? Lots of stories of these in use, and you know, one I came across was from 1873. One night at the inn in Northumberland, a place in England, a beggar knocked on the door pleading for a place to spend the night. He wore tattered rags, as you would. He was wet and cold from the rain. The inn had no spare rooms, but they allowed the poor man to lay down in the kitchen mat by the fire. Everybody but the cook went to bed as normal, and while in another room, the cook noticed some unusual behavior from the beggar. So the door was closed, but he looked into like the keyhole and he saw this. The beggar produced an old withered hand from his, I can only assume was a stick with a bandana to carry stuff around. So if television taught me anything, that's what beggars or bums or hobos use.
Sure.
Yeah. So he held out this old hand and he lit the fingers. Part of the lore is that each finger represents a person. So if there's five people in the house, you got five fingers burning, the five people will go in this deep sleep that you can't be woken from. As long as the finger is lit, the people are in a deep sleep. I guess this begs the question, what if there's more than five people in the house?
Yeah.
But you can't let the details get in the way of a good story.
Okay.
So once the fingers were lit, the beggar began looting. Started filling up his bandana full of shit.
Okay.
Gold doubloons and all this kind of stuff. So in his excitement for his newfound riches, he neglected to realize that one of the fingers wasn't lit. Hence, this is why the cook was still awake. Once the beggar went to a different room to keep stealing, the cook went to try and blow out the candles. He blew on him, didn't work. Poured beer on him, nothing worked. Other liquids didn't work. So out of desperation, he was trying to use all the different liquids he had. He finally came across milk. Not sure if it was cow, rat, or human. And he threw it on the flames and put him out. Everybody woke up, they caught the thief. And in the ultimate case of irony, he was hung for stealing and they cut off his hand to make another hand of glory. All right. I made that part up. There's several stories like this, but you know, that's the main gist of it. A guy used it to make people go to sleep and robs them. And for some reason, one person figures it out and saves the day. That's the hand of glory story. There's another story I want to go. It's not really a hand of glory per se, but it's about a severed hand and has a bit of a Newfoundland connection.
Oh, we love that.
Yeah. So the Haunch of Venison is a 700-year-old pub in England. So it's been around for quite a while. In the 1700s, a man arrived at the pub looking to join a card game being hosted at the establishment. He was met with some reservation, but after buying a round or two for the bar, he was welcome to join the game. The man was doing quite well, winning a small fortune, as it was a gambling game. But suddenly the bar's butcher, again, why does a bar have a butcher? But okay. Anyway, don't let these details ruin things. He inexplicably chopped the man's hand off, and just whack, did the cleaver. When he did it, several aces fell out of the sleeve of the now handless arm, indicating that his lucky streak may have been more than just luck. Butcher took the severed hand and threw it into the fireplace, which I'm sure created a beautiful aroma.
It smelled like bacon.
That's right. Fast forward to 1911, they were doing renovations in this pub, and the hand was discovered in the walls, completely intact. It was placed in a glass case along with a deck of cards where it remained on display. It was actually there, and in 2010, thieves, armed with a hand of glory to make sure everyone in the bar was asleep, unscrewed the glass and stole the hand. The hand of glory part's not true, but it actually was stolen. So the hand was never found, but the replica of the original is still on display at the bar.
Oh, the hand was stolen, but they have a replica. Okay.
So as for the Newfoundland connection, the game that they were playing, the man was cheating on, is a game called Whist. Whist is a trick-taking card game that is very similar to a Newfoundland staple, 120s. So 120s, anybody doesn't know, it's a very popular game here, whereby you're dealt 5 cards and you bid on how many tricks that you think you can get based on your hand. The highest bidder gets to call the trump suit. And the rank of cards goes 5, jack, ace of hearts, ace, king, queen. And if it's red, it's 10 to 2. And if it's black, it's 2 to 10. And that's very confusing. I understand that. But if you played the game, you'd know. If the first card played in a round is a trump card, it is called a whist. And for 46 years, I've been pronouncing it whisk. I'm sure I was today years old when I figured it was called whist, not whisk. And I think you were in the same boat.
Yes, I was.
But anyway, if a card is a whist, that means everyone else has to lay a trump. Unless you have the 5, jack, or ace of hearts. You can renege those. Unless the whist is a higher card than the card that started the whist.
And you don't have another trump.
For example, if...
so complicated.
If the jack of hearts is the first card played, you can renege the 5, but you cannot renege the ace of hearts if that's the only trump you have.
Right.
If the ace of hearts is played, you can renege the 5 and jack. If the king of hearts is played, you can renege any of those 3. No one really knows the rules of this game. You just kind of make them up, and there's lots of house rules, especially when you're playing with these cards and there's no trump out.
There's so many house rules. And you're absolutely right. If you say, I'm having a game of cards, there's no question as to what that game is. It's 120s.
But anyway, that's the thing. Like I said, so the game is whist, and that term is in 120s, and I guess it originated from this game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 120s is played different depending on what house you're in. So
that's right. But yeah, that's the hand of glory, excuse me. It's a weird story about how you can use a severed hand to become the ultimate thief, basically.
I mean, I could see it as something that you could be practical, like aside from breaking the law. I think it would be handy to have a hand of glory if you have like insomnia.
Oh, yeah.
You could rig it up so you could put yourself to sleep and then make sure you have some method for the milk to go on it to wake you up in time. Yeah. But like that would be better than melatonin.
Yeah. Power outages. You got infinite light.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck that generator. You got your light there.
You can cook off the endless flame.
Yeah. If you didn't have to cut the hand off of a murderer, yeah. It would be a great tool for all kinds of practical purposes. It's real, right? Is that a real thing that existed? I mean, I don't think it was infinite candles and stuff, but did people try to do this in real life?
I'm sure they did. Yeah. I mean, like, so you get these stories, but you don't know, like when you start talking about stories from 1852 and there's no stories from like 2019 or nothing like that. Right. So when you get all these stories, you really got to take them with a grain of salt. We've said this before on many of these podcasts. When we talk about these, folklore type things, it's always 200 years ago that they took place.
Yeah. Anyway, that's fucked up. So in the story that I told, the person who dies gives consent, right? Like, yes, you can go ahead and make pants out of me. But in the Hand of Glory, it's not really that person's choice.
No, I guess you want to take the hand of a seedy person because you plan to do seedy things with it, right? So
Right. So, cool. Hand of Glory.
The ultimate skeet weapon.
Yes, for sure. You have Forever Lights for Darts, too.
That's true, yeah, that's right. Got no light for the dark, though. I got the light for you.
My son.
We'll rob the smokes out of the store, and then we got the lights to go with it.
It is the ultimate skeet tool. See, there's all kinds of Newfoundland tie-ins to the Hand of Glory. That's right. Cool. Awesome.
There you have it. Weird ways people's body parts were used after death.
What do you think about these stories? You can share your ideas with us at someweirdpodcast@gmail.com.
Or on the X or Instagram at somewirdpod.
Or at our website, somewirdpodcast.com.
If you haven't done so already, please follow or subscribe wherever you listen so you'll never miss an episode. And don't forget to check out our other podcast, The Some Weird Side Quest, where we get together with our occasional guest host, Ted, to rate and review Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave.
And if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to help us out, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen so others can discover us. And don't be afraid to tell a friend about the Some Weird Podcast.
Cutting shit off of people some weird, boy.
So weird. 100% glory here because all my lights went out. I have like battery operated lights and they all went out. So I'm in pitch black. Anyways.